pretty dry. And Texas, we're kind of used to that. You know, usually July and August, our grass is turning brown, you know, around here. On some occasions, of course, it'll stay green throughout the summer. And we've had some very mild summers here of late in the last several years. But we're kind of used to, you know, the heat turning on and the cracks coming up in the fields and yards and having to water your foundation to not lose your house and that type of thing. And, you know, seasons, rain seasons and dry seasons, they come and go. And seasons also happen in churches. They do. And sometimes, you know, it's raining showers of blessing. Other times it seems like things are a little bit dry, you know. Things are a little dry. Well, what do you need when things are dry? Well, you need rain. You need the blessings of the Lord to come down. That's what I really talk to you about tonight. And I knew I would be long this morning, and I especially knew it after Brother Garrett's question to me last night. I knew that, oh boy, I'm never going to get done with this. But I need to get done with it because next week, of course, is the anniversary service. Oh, by the way, interject. Jeff and Gene are going to have a boy. It's a boy. It's a boy. If you saw his tie this morning, it said it's a boy. So pray for London. Bless her heart, you know. But she's excited, and as she should be, and the family's all excited about that, and that's good. But I knew from this morning, I knew I'd be alone, and I always feel sorry for the nursery workers and children's church workers when I know I'm going to be going a little bit long. I tried a few years ago to get Brother Colt, you know, the music director of the church that works for me. I would try to say, yeah, I've got a long sermon. Can you cut out a few verses? But I found out he just sang whatever he wanted to sing anyway. Stubborn. He must be a little bit like his dad. Must be just a little bit like his dad. But I knew I'd be a little bit long this morning, so I thought maybe I'll give you some change tonight. Maybe. We will see. Normally when I say things like that, I really don't end up giving you much change. So anyway, we'll do the best we can. Take your Bible and go to Ezra chapter 9. I love Ezra and Nehemiah and that whole time of the restoration. I like things to be renewed and restored if they need to be restored. We've made a practice. We just went through the list the other day, and I've never been a good one about taking pictures like Paul and Cindy. They're just really good at that. And I kind of say, you know, and have said through the years, I live life and others take the pictures. But I do kind of, well, I do regret that. Because I turn around and wish I had something to kind of remember. You know, all the churches that we've helped establish. And I wish, you know, I would, we take pictures and we send delegates to go take pictures. I didn't get the mic on, did I? Let's see, where do I have it? It broke this morning, so I have to. Okay, I got it in my pocket. And so we send. He don't want to hear me either, you know. We send delegates out, and they go out and they take pictures. And I put them up, but I don't put them up in one place. That way I can add to them. You know, I don't have them organized, Miss Debbie. And so they just kind of get lost through the years. Or you change computer programs, software programs. And, it's on that computer, and then that computer gives up the ghost. And, well, okay, you know. So I don't update and keep them all in one place. And so I regret not doing that because, you know, the Lord has blessed us not only to start but to salvage a great number of churches. And that's not foreign churches. That's just churches here in the United States. And I like salvaging people. I like seeing people saved. I like seeing families and Christians salvaged. I hate to see where Christians are so despondent, they got burned maybe, had a bad experience or whatever, and they've lost the joy of the Lord. And one of the things I'll tell them, I don't know if this is where God would have you, but I'll tell you, you do need a church like this that can help love you back to the joy of the Lord. And we've had, in some setting right here in this room, have been in that category. And I love seeing people salvage their lives. I hate to see people ruin their lives. I hate it. When I know what's available to them, if they would simply turn from wickedness and turn and be committed long term. I've told you before about Brother Jerry, you know, and what I told him and Deborah many years ago. If you'll get faithful in the house of God and you'll stick it out, in 20 years you'd just be absolutely amazed where you are. And so I've seen it. I've seen firsthand. You know, being in a church, a church, long term, you get to see all the history unravel. And I've seen the blessings of faithfulness, and I've seen the blessings of righteousness. I've seen it. I've seen God bless. I've seen people that didn't have hardly anything when they came here, how God prospered them and blessed their work and kept them working when other people lost their jobs and lost their jobs and lost their jobs. And God took care of them just like He promised in Psalm 1. I've just seen it time and time and time again. And I just really, it breaks my heart. I get frustrated even with it when Christians fail to continue on in the path that they know themselves that they should continue. And it bothers me. It bothers me. Sometimes I wish it didn't bother me so much. But it's sort of like, you know, your teachers, your school teachers, if you didn't shed a tear, you probably wouldn't be as worthy of a teacher as you are. You know? And it's, but I tell you, after a while, when you've been doing it a number of years, you are sometimes tempted to just maybe not care quite so much. Aren't you? I am. I'm no different probably than you. And over time, next thing you know, you become calloused. And if you're not careful, we get into a season ourselves when we're outside of where we need to be. And it's a sad thing when Christians are no longer acting like Christians. I know we live in a wonderful country. And I know we're blessed beyond our wildest imaginations, but most of us cannot imagine well enough. But I know that we're blessed. But I know sometimes we really take it for granted. And the next thing you know, we have a Christianity of such apathy in our country. And again, we have a problem with apathy, but who cares? Well, what's so sad is when Christian people start acting like lost people, and what's worse, when they act like they no longer care. No longer care. And that's beyond breaking the heart of God, and it's beyond breaking the heart of people who have loved and invest in other people. And they seem to be just absolutely determined to turn back to their vomit, like a dog returns to vomit. Turn back to it and turn their way away from God. But I'm here to tell you, it can happen to any of us. Through the years, I've been here a long time, as some young bucks like to pickle me about. And I'm really not that old. I can still whip most of them. I'm not that old. I'm 58 years old. February, I'll be 59. So I'm not young. Sometimes my back acts like it's really old, but the rest of me is ready to go, you know. Just give me a few minutes to get my back limbered up a little bit, you know. But I hate to see people turn away from where they need to be and start acting like they shouldn't act. I just hate it. And during times of such, people turn and they start doing all kinds of things. Christian people start acting like unsaved people. And they get in leagues and get in marriages and get engaged and get in all kinds of things and unequally yoked situations. And they don't even realize how dangerous this is. It's almost like they've never read the book. And don't see the danger involved in bad decisions, bad decisions, bad decisions. Now, during the days, of course, of Nehemiah and Ezra, the nation of Israel, well, certainly is in disarray. They were in need of restoration. They were in need of being restored. They were in need of revival. They were in need of great correction. Facilities, of course, of the capital, the walls there needed to be rebuilt. The temple, of course, had been destroyed in disarray, and there are many spiritual problems, but really the spiritual problems were the root issues of all the other things, because had they not been there, they would never have been chastened by God in the first place. They would have still been in the land, still been happy and holy in the Lord. But next thing you know, here comes the chastening hand of God, and it is what it is. The Jews, of course, had been displaced, and by that they were exposed to these others. They were taken to a different people, and all of a sudden they're exposed to, well, how the Gentiles do it, how the nations do it, how the unbelievers do it, how the pagans do it, how the lost miniskirts do it, how the lost gigolos do it. You see, I mean, they just get exposed to things that good and godly parents work overtime to try to keep their kids reasonably insulated, not isolated, but insulated from this type. The world, the people of the world, the people who are motivated by the world. The other day I saw a picture of Britney Spears when she, just after the Disney time. And I told Dory, I said, look at this picture. She said, give me your glasses. So I had to give her my glasses. We were laying in the bed. And she said, give me your glasses. Now her eyes are a lot worse than mine, but we got to have some help. So I gave her my glasses. And I said, look at this. Look at this beautiful girl. Look at this beautiful girl. And she looked, she said, who is that? Who is that? And I said, that's Britney Spears. Oh. And I said, look, look. A beautiful girl. And she was. She was just a girl. I said to her, just a girl. Just a girl. And look what's happened. A mess. A royal mess. The pride of Garland years ago, Leanne Rimes. You know, I mean, people of Garland were so proud of her, you know. Put Garland on the map. Boy, here she was, blue. Sound like a hound dog, you know. Caselyn does it better than me. We used to have a little competition when we'd be driving to Florida to see who could do that the best, you know. But then you'd be ashamed. Matter of fact, I think I downloaded that song because we would just be a play with it. And when it comes up on my phone, I just skip over it. Now, just skip over it. Why? No fondness. No fondness at all. Heartbreak. Heartbreak. And you look at the life and all of the stuff about Britney Spears and the girl just in shambles of a life. Leanne Rimes, same thing. At one time, they were beautiful, promising girls. You'd never dream by looking at this picture of late and looking at that picture that those are the same two people. Living a life of sin is a hard life. It's a hard life. I remember years ago thinking somebody, you know, they're an attractive person. But then they gave their life to a life really of sin, you know, back home. And every once in a while you see them, and you see them 30 years later, you say, howdy ho. Rough. Rough. There's nothing as beautiful as a woman who fears the Lord. Even a brand new puppy dog. And I like puppy dogs. There's nothing as beautiful. But you want to talk about ugly. You let a woman, a beautiful woman, girl, live a life of 30 years of sin. And it's beyond ugly. It's sad. It's really, really depressing. And so many lives need to be rebuilt. So many lives need a revival. Spiritual problems. Here, they had a lot of problems. But most of them were spiritual problems. And one, of course, was being intermarried with unbelievers, with the Gentiles. These Jews had been, of course, displaced, and by that they were exposed to all these others, and sometimes when that happens, the grass looks greener on the other side of the fence. That book years ago, I think I had a copy one time, but it's probably like many of my books, loaned out and never found its way home. The grass is greener over the septic tank. I had that book at one time. The grass is greener over the septic tank. All the young men decided, whoo, look at that over there. I kind of like, you know, they kind of, well, we got used to those Jewish girls, and all of a sudden they see all these other Gentile girls, and I think I like that, you know. Next thing you know, they're riding off on their donkeys and marrying some other girl. Well, that's not so bad, but that other girl has a different God. She comes from a different type of family. And we think, well, families don't matter. Oh, they do matter. They really, really do matter. People ask me, say, what do you think should be considered when you're considering a spouse? I'd ask the question, what do you think should not be considered? I would say you should, if you're going to be wise, you consider every single thing you can think of. And then ask around and see if you can add to your list. You'd be wise to do so. There would be people who would be interested in marriage again. If they had better assurances, they would not get burned as they were before. That's right. Well, the Jews, of course, were forbidden to intermarry even among tribes, but this was outside of even the people of Israel. And it's a horrible sin against God. God had spoken well about this and their people, and even a sin against one another for the purposes that God had for the people of Israel. And the prophet looks at all these things, and as the man of God with the heart of God, he sees the need of a nation. And he's heartbroken. He's heartbroken. Now, a lot of times we look at preachers, we look at priests, we look at prophets, and we say, man, I mean, they just thunder down like Moses from Mount Sinai. They don't even have any feelings. And I've been accused of that, boy, you know, I've been accused of being a hard man. And I don't think I'm a hard man at all. I don't think I'm a hard man to men that I know who are hard. Hard. But at the same time, even great prophets like this, and prophets and priests, their hearts can be broken too. Sometimes girls don't think their daddy's hearts can be broken, but you'd be wrong. Boy, you'd be wrong. And you say, well, I've never seen my daddy cry. That doesn't mean he hasn't cried. That doesn't mean he hasn't cried. The prophet looks on all these things as the man of God, and he sees a need. And it's a need for spiritual awakening and revival. So what is needed for that in a church? When things get a little dry, or maybe some of God's people start acting like they're really not God's people and start breaking God's heart. Well, let's begin in verse 1. Now when these things were done, the princes came to me saying, the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the land. So a lot of people were guilty of it. Doing according to their abomination. So that is the second shoe to fall. Right? Even of the Canaanites, Hittites, and the Perizzites, and the Jebusites, and the Ammonites, and the Moabites, and the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken of their daughters for themselves. Now that's still yet how it flushes out. That's how it starts and how it continues down that road. Next thing you know, hey, well, I kind of like her. I kind of like her. And for their sons, so both sexes, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Yea, the hand of the princes and rulers hath been chief in this trespass. So even the people who not only knew so, but well knew so, probably had taught against such in the past, now are doing things that they would have never done. Do you know of any Christian people who've been Christian, say, for 20 plus years, who are now doing things that they would have never done in the first 20 years of your relationship or knowledge of their life? I see heads nodding. Yes. But at one time, never. That would have never happened. That would have never happened. But what's happened, that now it is a reality. Verse 3 says, and when I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle. They didn't stop there. It wasn't just about his clothes. Plucked off the hair of my head and of my beard and sat down astonished. Total despair. Have you ever, and I'm not talking about a figure of speech, have you ever seen anyone so distraught, so upset, they just reach up and grab their hair and pull it out I have. It's great despair. Then his beard. And it says here that he sat down. I think it's more likely he fell down. Because it's sort of like at funerals, you know, at the final viewing. It's a great time of struggle for a lot of people. And the funeral home directors and the assistants, they're always ready. You know, some smelling salts or something like that. And sometimes you kind of see it coming. And he's, if it's a preacher, you know, you step closer to the casket to be there to help them. And next thing you know, they just fall. They collapse. They're overwhelmed. And I think that's what happened here to the priest. Total anguish. How could this happen? Total anguish. And he goes down. Then were assembled unto me everyone that trembled at the words of the Lord of Israel, Lord God, of words of the God of Israel, because of the transgression of those that have been carried away. And I sat astonished until the evening sacrifice. So those that felt likewise, they came together in mourning. And at the evening sacrifice, I arose up from my heaviness. Having rent my garment and my mantle, I fell upon my knees and spread out my hands unto the Lord my God. And said, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift up my face to thee. I'm ashamed to even look up to you, my God. For our, not my, but our iniquities are increased over our head, and our trespasses grown up into the heavens, far beyond the highest trees of the land, the highest mountains of the land, grown up unto the heavens. Since the days of our fathers have we been in a great trespass unto this day. We have never honored God the way we should. For our iniquities have we, our kings and our priests, been delivered into the hand of the kings of the land, of the lands, to the sword, to captivity, to into a spoil, and to confusion of face, as it is this day. And now for a little space grace hath been showed from the Lord our God, to leave us a remnant to escape, and to give us a nail in his holy place, that our God may lighten our eyes and give us a little reviving in our bondage. God has given us a respite. For we were bondmen, yet our God hath not forsaken us in our bondage, but hath extended mercy unto us in the sight of the kings of Persia, to give us a reviving, and to set up the house of our God, and to repair the desolations thereof, and to give us a wall in Judah and in Jerusalem. And now, O our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken thy commandments, which thou hast commanded by thy servants the prophets, saying, the land unto which ye go to possess it is an unclean land, with the filthiness of the people of the lands, with their abominations which have filled it from one end to the other with their uncleanness. Now therefore give not our daughters unto their sons. We see a correction effort. Neither take your daughters unto your sons, nor seek their peace or their wealth forever. In other words, stop living after their worldview, that ye may be strong and eat the good of the land and leave it for an inheritance to your children forever, as promised by God for those who would be so obedient. And after all that has come upon us for our evil deeds, all this we brought upon ourselves. God did not cause this. Everybody's always trying to blame God for all their ills. After all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and for our great trespass, seeing that thou art our God, hath punished us less than our iniquities deserve. In other words, grace is still openly manifest. You've heard people say, when I was young, I got a lot of spankings, but I didn't get all that I deserved. I didn't. How about you? And has given us such deliverance as this. Should we again now, again and again and again, break thy commandments and join in affinity with the people of these abominations? Wouldest not thou be angry with us till thou hast consumed us, so that there should be no remnant at all? Totally annihilation. nor escaping. O Lord God of Israel, Thou art righteous, for we remain yet escaped, as it is this day. Behold, we are before Thee in our trespasses, for we cannot stand before Thee because of this. Well, what is needed? Let me give you three things real quick. To see God's people, but especially God's pillars. I had a church member one time after I preached, pillars and support walls, and I have a church member come up to me and ask me, Pastor, me and my wife, are we support wall people? If you have to ask, you're not. If you're support wall people, you have other people that you're ministering to and helping to carry along. You know who you are, and you know who you're not. But to see God's people, but especially leaders, praying from the heart. This prophet, this priest, is laying it all out. There's no hiding. Why hide from God who sees all things? How can we hide from the all-seeing eyes of God? Verse 5 says, at the evening sacrifice, I rose up from my heaviness. Having rent my garments and my mantle, I fell upon my knees and spread out my hands unto the Lord my God. And so you see also those of the same mind coming together. Revivals don't come by nominal Christians who happen to be members of the church. That's not where revival will come from. Revival will always come from the inner circle and work its way out. It will always come from the pillars in a church. Renewal starts on the inside and works its way to the outside. Psalm 126, verse 6, talking about weeping and praying with heart. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. It's been well said that the effort of winning and training souls without emotion and passion will at best produce a thin harvest. If you don't care, the rest won't either. The rest won't either. Luke 18:1, he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint. Of course, James 5:16, confess your faults one to another, pray one for another, that ye may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. When you ask people to pray for you, are you kind of selective who you ask to pray for you? I am. Why? Because I know people who live carnal Christian lives, and they haven't rang the bells of heaven since they were saved. Why should I ask them to pray for me? They may utter words, but they might as well speak to the ceiling. That's about as far as it's going to go. You say, well, that's kind of judgmental. Well, maybe so. But if I want somebody to pray for me, I ask people that I know have a walk with God. Because I want them to be serious about it, and I know they will be. And it's not all, I'll pray. If you want to see better seasons, it has to start from the inside. And it starts with a bended knee, a tear in the eye, and a broken heart. Do you care? Do you care? You say, well, I care. I've just got a lot of other things going on. You mean things that the rest of the world is so troubled and fretting over all the time? All of that stuff? And lost sight of the things of eternity? We're all guilty of this to one degree or another, even in this season or perhaps a season yet right around the corner. Number two, to see God reward good people for praying. Don't you like to see God's blessings on others? Don't you like to see somebody pray and hear about their prayer request and then learn of the answer that was given by God? Look at verse 9. He says, and we were bondmen, yet our God hath not forsaken us in our bondage, but hath extended mercy unto us in the sight of the kings of Persia, and give us a reviving, to set up the house of our God, and to repair the desolations thereof, and to give us a wall in Judah and in Jerusalem. The testimony of someone else of God's goodness in your life. It is always a joy to me to see God's blessings upon good people. You know, the prayer is a faith, and faith, of course, brings blessing in our life and our church. If we don't have faith, we really ought not to expect the blessing. But if we have faith, we really ought to expect the blessing. We're talking about podcast, Lord willing, that we're looking at doing in 2025 about Indigenous mission. And one of the points that was brought up the other day in the eloquence of the Sanhedrin meeting in the office place, you know, is the lack sometimes of younger men to believe in the fruit that God can give. In other words, to believe that they can succeed in the work of God. If you think, oh, I'm going to go fishing today, but I'm not going to catch any fish, you're probably going to prove yourself true. If you go golfing and you say, I'm not going to make any putts today, you're probably right. You're probably right. Now, it's not this, you know, just a pie in the sky, superficial foolishness. But if you don't believe that God can use the jawbone of an ass and He can use you, you're mistaken. But if you think, God's called me, but God's not going to bless me, I don't think you really believe God's called you. Self-defeated even before they ever get started. They've already shot themselves in the foot. Brother Colt reminded me the other day, and he said, you have shot yourself in the foot. And I said, I never have shot. He said, oh, yes, you have, just not with a bullet, with an arrow. Well, that was in the big toe. That's different than from the foot. Yeah. It wasn't exactly shot, but it was kind of shot. So he's always looking for those nuances that he can Google and figure them out. Number three. To hear God's people tell, what do you want? What do you want? You ever have a child come to you and they just beat all around the bush and they never get to the point of what they want? You're busy and you're, you know, okay, you love your child and you want to help them out, you know, but you really wish they would get to the point. What do you want? Right? When I do that, usually my children would say, you're yelling at me. That's not yelling. You want to hear some yelling, I can really light you up. That's not yelling. What do you want? You know, it's sort of like that we're talking about these movies, music, you know, Fiddler on the Roof, you know, and he's talking to the guy, you know, and he has to really get in his face and, what do you want? Sometimes I wonder if God's just been there. What do you want? What do you want, Christian? What do you want? Look at verse 12. Now therefore give not your daughters unto sons. So the priest wanted something of the people. You've heard the illustration about the president who told the preacher after he had visited, you know, a particular church in Washington. He said, if you worked for me, I'd fire you. You didn't ask me to do anything. Give not your daughters unto their sons, and neither take their daughters unto your sons, nor seek their peace on their wealth forever, that ye may be strong and eat the good of the land and leave it for an inheritance to your children forever. James Gore says, you lust and you have not, you killed and desire to have, cannot obtain, you fight in war, yet you have not because you ask not. What do you want? What do you want? You want a good wife? You want a good husband? You want a good education? You want a good job? Want a good church? What do you want? Do you ask God for it? Do you work for it? If you recall the sermon years ago, and I don't know how long it was, because when I thought about, you know, the series I just went through in the music series that I taught, that goes back like 14 years, and then a little piece of one about 10 years ago, I thought it was just 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm like, and I do this all the time to Dory, and I said, you remember it's just a couple years ago? She said, no, what, a couple years ago? That was at least 10 years ago. No, it couldn't be 10 years ago. Just can't be that long. Well, she's normally right. Don't tell her that, but she's normally right. I try to keep her more humble, you know. things work out better that way. And you know, if I can do it, I'm not always successful. But I preach this message, how big is your pot? And the bigger the pot, the more pots that were delivered, the more the oil was given. Provision was actually made in 2 Kings 4:6. Came to pass when the vessels were full that she said unto her son, bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, there is not a vessel more. And the oil stayed. The more we supply, the more we ask, the more God can give. How big is your pot? How large is your faith? I have found a lot of people limit God in their own lives. In their own lives. Certainly we're not our own worst enemy. You've heard that all my life. We're Jesus' own worst enemy. As long as Satan's running around, I don't think anybody can lay claim to that. But I think we ought to attempt great things for God and expect great things from God. I'm not much, but I can still expect fruit, and I do expect fruit. I preach expecting fruit. I expect the Word of God to do what God's promised for it to do. I expect it. I expect it to rub the sinner the wrong way. I do. Man said the other day, our family said, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but said, we think, or he, well, how can I say this? They think we've taught you all about him and set him up. No, not set him up, but I'm glad the Word of God has conviction. I'm glad it has conviction from my own life. What good would it be if it didn't have any correction value to it? I thank God my dad had a belt. I thank God my mother had a belt. I thank God my Aunt Mio, sweet Japanese woman, she had a shoe. I saw this cutest thing the other day. So cute. I'm ashamed to say where I saw it, but it was on Facebook. But I'm ashamed. But it was so cute. And it was just like a lab, you know. And Lad had a little bitty puppy, her puppy, you know, her little puppy. And they sent so much emotion, you know, those particular dogs. And the little puppy had eaten the wires off of some little electronic. And the owner was just getting on to the, do you see what you've done? Do you see what you've done? And did like that. And every time she'd raise that shoe up like she was going to spank that puppy, you know, for eating up that wire, that mama dog would reach out with the paw and then turn and put her paw over her baby. Don't hit my baby. Don't spank my baby. And that little baby put his head down like that and turned. Wouldn't even look up. Mama would take care of me. Sweet. What that has to do with anything, I don't really know. I'll pick up my train of thought. Do you ask? Do you limit God? Scripture says we are laborers together with God. You are God's husband. You are God's building. We have to work together to bring in a harvest. Can't be done by one person. Can't be done by a few people. It needs to be done corporately with us all working together. Sometimes my life and my outreach is more fertile than yours. Other times yours is more fertile than mine. So we need to be doing this together. Well, I told you I was going to give you some change back. There's about 4 minutes. I have more, but I'm going to quit just where I can say. You say you would do that? Yeah, I'm doing that. Let's stand.